Welcome back to Short Stories of Black History. This is part two of Reparations. Last episode, we had Chastity with us, and we talked about all the instances of reparations that America has divvied out for Black Americans. And again, I want to stress that African Americans have not been, Black people have not been the only people to receive reparations. There's Native Americans, Alaskan Natives, the Hawaiian Natives, the Japanese people who were in internment camps got reparations, and I think that's important. But again, focusing on the Black section of it right now. Where we left off last was we had finished up a list starting in 1783, ending up in the year 2020 on a long list of reparations and apologies given out. And if you have not listened to part one, you're going to need to go back and listen to that because it is exhausting.
Yes.
To say the least.
Very long list.
Yes, it is. It's a long list. And it's come in mostly forms monetarily. In some form or fashion, some people directly gave cash payments. In other instances, there were grants and scholarships and funds set up. Some just said, sorry about that, and left it at that. So what we're going to look at today, going forward, is it a real plan? Is reparations something that can really be divvied out to every African American, every Black person in America? Is that a valid statement? Is it real to say, I want reparations? And if so, what form do you get it in? Who gets it? How will it be given out? Where will it come from?
Yeah.
And is it fair to be given out? And we're going to look at some research here and some things that journalists and organizations have come up with in favor and against reparations. Because some people would say, no, Black people don't deserve reparations. You know, Martin Luther King, they told him, you know, pull your bootstraps up, you know? So we're going to look at, first of all, do you agree with reparations?
I do agree with the process or, you know, the idea of reparations. Okay. I don't necessarily know what that should look like for everyone because everyone is not going to have the same needs.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have to be something that collectively would be able to benefit, you know, the majority of people who would receive it.
Okay, and that's a great statement to start off with. I would like to challenge you by the end of this podcast to choose a side because you're going to hear different ways that people have thought about reparations,
mm-hmm.
and it's important to choose. It is.
This list that you have, or, you know, these ideas are not the, this is it. It could be other things.
Well, let's talk about it. So, according to the Constitutional Rights Foundation, a man named Robert Brock, who's a Los Angeles campaigner for reparations, argued for direct payment of descendants of slaves. He was quoted saying, the government owes us money on a number of different fronts, including for labor, for loss of culture, and humanity. Journalist Ron Daniels proposed government financing of a national fund to develop educational and economic opportunities for the entire African-American community. Daniels argued in an editorial that, quote, America must own up to its responsibility to make damaged people whole again.
But how do you do that?
He told you. He says national fund to develop educational and economic opportunities.
That makes, see, I just...
Hold that thought. Okay. We'll come back to it. Because I know things are going through your head. Let's hear some people out for a second. The National Coalition for Blacks for Reparations in America, also known as NCOBRA, advocate a broader approach. They believe that government could satisfy the call for reparations by a variety of means, including land, ownership of companies, stock, money, and I haven't heard this one before, aircraft. The group also calls for a method of self-government for American blacks to give them autonomy. And They also say, well, we'll come back to that, but let's pin self-government for American blacks to give them autonomy. Let's put a pin in that because I definitely want to come back to that because in one of our conversations, this is something that you advocated for and I want to talk this out. Some favor direct payments to slave descendants ranging from $25,000 to $100,000 or more. Others, like N. Cobra, believe a final amount cannot be determined until more study has been done to determine the harm slavery has caused blacks. But they suggest the total amount could be in the trillions.
Yeah.
Okay. So there are kind of three fundamentally different ideas okay. that people see reparations. And they're all different, you know?
Yeah.
There are. They want education. One wants education and economic opportunities. One has a list, stocks, companies, aircraft, in addition to money. And then one says, you know, if you just give me that cash, run me that check. Run me that check and we'll be good. Okay. So are you sold on any of those ideas?
No.
No.
I think it can be a combination of those things. I don't think it's just one or the other for me.
Okay. Well, let's continue on because we ended with the amount could be in the trillions. Here recently, Robert L. Johnson has created a $14 trillion plan for reparations that would allow each black person who is a descendant of someone who was enslaved $350,000 apiece.
That's a lot of dough.
$350,000. Excuse me. It'll be over $350,000. I'm rounding, and yeah, that's a lot of cash.
But,
mm-hmm.
I feel, and you and I had this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
When you get that $350,000, is that the government's way of saying, okay, we've given you your money, and we're done with it. Let's be done with it.
It's hard to predict the ripple effects, but I agree. To me, in my, you know, very novice opinion as mm-hmm. a black man, I am unwilling to take social injustice, police brutality, slavery, Jim Crow, lynchings. I am unwilling to take that all off the table and replace it with $350,000.
And I agree with you.
I am totally
because that doesn't change any of those things. It doesn't.
No.
We can't go back in the past and change slavery anyway. However, the current state of affairs in the world is crazy, especially with how law enforcement treats African-American
mm-hmm.
Men in particular, but women as well. That doesn't change that. That doesn't change the mindset of police officers who are out in the street. To me, it feels like it would give them even more ammunition to mess with you in particular, you know, because you're a black man, just because now they know you have this money. And in a lot of cases, that's a lot more money than police officers are making.
Okay.
Not even close to it.
All right. Hold on to your passion.
Okay. You know what? You know, I get riled up. I'm sorry.
We're not done yet.
All right.
But that brings up one of the major arguments against slavery is what you said is we can't go back in the past. So according to, where's the website? I don't want to misquote it. Brookings.edu, I believe. It talks about the pros and cons for reparation. And one of the cons is there are no black slaves living today. Slavery ended a long time ago at the cost of several hundred thousand lives lost in the Civil War. And they believe that today it is unfair to ask American taxpayers, many of them families that came to America after slavery ended, to pay for the wrongs of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the arguments. And do you have a counter to that?
How can they say that their families came after slavery? You know, like, you don't know. I'm not saying it's directly their fault, but it's mm-hmm. not fair to say, well, you don't get anything because those people are all dead now and we didn't really have anything to do with it.
I agree. I think, again, very novice opinion is if you chose to come to America. We as black people did not.
No, that was not
a
choice.
We did not get that choice. That was, you know, that was not an option. We were forcibly here. And I've read several articles about, you know, there were instances where black people tried to, I mean, black people suggested, let's just go back to Africa. And many of them said, no, you know, we built this nation. We fought wars and so we fought in the Civil War.
We deserve to be here.
We earned the right to be here. This you brought us here and, you know, we created a life here and we're going to stay here. Mm-hmm. You know, by 1865, there had been generations here and this is all that they knew. So having said that, you know, as an American, you want America to be socially equal. And if you choose to be an American, part of helping being socially equal will be helping to chip into reparations, in my thought process.
Yes. And this is saying if it was monetary, there's, you know.
Right, if it was that's assuming a monetary form of reparations. But that's a lot of people's argument. I've heard a couple people say that why should we have to pay reparations? There have been, you know, there's nobody alive who participated in slavery today.
However, like in the first part where it said we are still feeling the effects of enslavement. Absolutely.
If you go back and listen to episode one, there was a statement that said we are still feeling the effects of slavery. It would be, you know, I heard a great analogy watching the Oprah show the other day. And they said that for America, it's swimming in a stream. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a white person, they could swim with the flow of the current. Mm-hmm. And black people, although we're in the same stream, although we have the same struggles, we're forced to swim against the current. And that makes it that much harder. And, you know, those effects started at the flood of slavery. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Those effects started as that current was pushed by slavery, and it made it a lot easier for white people to develop, you know, financial, you know, growth that black people did not. Mm-hmm. The same way we talked about those people in Florida who were able to take advantage of that land grant that was given, the Homestead Act. They had to do it for a reasonable price without white investors or white landowners coming because they could not compete. Mm-hmm. They could not. And that's a huge, huge task to mention. And we'll go through some of these pros and cons here, if you don't mind. Another one says that the problems faced by African Americans today are not the legacy of slavery or even racism. Many blacks have succeeded very well in American society. The problems of poor African Americans are caused by social ills within the inner city, such as the breakdown of families, high crimes, and dependence on welfare.
And where is all that rooted in? The lack of opportunities for African Americans. The fact that zoning issues cause all of us to be in one area in the first place. So, and then what do you get when you put a bunch of people who are poor, who can't pay their bills, who lack resources, and they're angry? What do you get? You get a high crime rate. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, you can say that, but guess what? The you have to go back to the root of why that happened in the first place. Mm-hmm. It all goes back to the same thing. Yes, there are a lot of African Americans who have succeeded, but guess what? You could probably name them all. Because they stick out so much, as opposed to where a white person is successful, so many of them, that you get lost in the list. Mm.
Indeed, indeed. You know, and success is divvied out differently. You know, I feel like, as a black man, you know, I've succeeded. I feel like I'm doing well. I've done, you know, mostly everything that I've wanted to do, which I know that it's been harder than it has been for some of my white counterparts. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the things, you know, we talk about is things that they've done. And they was like, yeah, just go do that real fast. And for me, it doesn't work that way. And one of my amazing experiences is I grew up in, you know, all black neighborhood and an all black high school. You know, I didn't learn to navigate white space until I went to college and finally understand that we don't live the same, you know. Our hard times are hard times on both people because, you know, you're going to always have, you know, funerals affect everybody. Mm-hmm. Sickness affects everybody. And, you know, all our problems, for the most part, can be the same, but none of their problems resulted in or because of the color of their skin.
Exactly.
You know, they never have to worry about people following them in the store, mm-hmm. or which neighborhoods they jog through. You know, that is a conscious decision by specifically me as a black man every day. You know, if I choose to, you know, run in a neighborhood that I am unfamiliar with, what I've learned to do is wear a shirt of like the college sports team.
Yeah.
And people look at me differently.
Yeah, because they think you're an athlete. They think like, I'm an athlete. Oh, he went there. Yeah. Oh, I mean, you are an athlete, but they think you played right. for that particular team.
Right, right.
Because you get that question a lot. And you know,
every day.
And it's crazy that you have had to develop a method to go running so that no one bothers you, or that, you know, that you make it back home safely. Mm-hmm. When you leave out the door, I'm like, please be careful. You know, watch out. It's because it's a worry for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so here's another argument against reparations. It says that the federal and state governments have already spent billions of dollars on social programs such as welfare, subsidized housing, health care, employment developments, affirmative action, and education. These programs have benefited African Americans. And that would be a reason that they, you don't need reparations.
Okay, what they could do is they could look at before these programs were created and where the state of, you know, the African American community is now, and see have they progressed? Have they changed? Has the, you know, economic growth increased? Has job opportunities increased? Has educational opportunities increased? And if no, then that's not a great argument for me. If you can't prove to me that those things have worked, maybe it helped them survive.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it helped them live in a comfortable or safe housing, and maybe to be able to get, you know, some vegetables at the grocery store. But how has it helped them progress to be better so they don't have to rely on those programs?
Right. I agree. I think those programs are built to help some people survive, you know, rather than thrive.
Or progress.
And progress. And that's not, and I'm thinking, you know, for Black people, that we're not looking, well, first of all, we're struggling to survive as it is, as we're being killed every day.
Yeah.
But we're looking to thrive, and the government spending billions of dollars, somebody's argument was, you take all those government-funded activities that you're doing and put that into reparations and watch it change people's lives more, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because let's go back to that $14 trillion plan where every American gets $350,000 a piece, you know, there's seems to be no need for welfare, for subsidized housing.
Mm-hmm.
You can pay to go to school to get that better job that you're looking for. Mm-hmm.
Without having to get those loans.
Yeah, you can pay for that education for your kids. You don't necessarily need SNAP anymore.
Exactly.
Or food stamps. And all that money that the government has fallen into to that area can be appropriated another place, and that's the part of that $350,000 plan. Another one. African Americans, particularly the young, need to overcome their problems through their own efforts and not depend on more government handouts and benefits. Do we even need to address this?
Where did this come from?
To be honest with you, I can't remember exactly.
This sounds like these quotes sound very uninformed. Like, this sounds like just someone's opinion.
These are actual. These are real reasons to go against slavery. I mean, to go against reparations. Yeah, these are real. It came from a very reputable.
That's what I'm saying. Sure. Like, okay,
this isn't from, you know, WikiLeaks or something like that. Like, research to do.
I don't even need to address.
It's pretty thorough. I'll say this on it is. You're wrong. Overcoming your skin color is not an option. I was born this way. The fact that you look at me differently because of my skin color is not something that I have to overcome. That's something that you have to overcome.
I'm not in control of that.
I'll tell this quick story. When I was in college, and this is totally different from our format of usual telling stories and whatnot in history, but it's a follow-up. So in college, we had gotten in... The sports team I played with had gotten in trouble for an on-campus incident.
Okay.
And there were 8 people charged with the same thing on campus by the administration board or whatever. So when we all came out and it was all said and done, we all looked at each other and, you know, it was 4 white people, 4 Black kids, 8 people total, 4 Black kids, 4 white kids. And one of the older guys came in, and I was a freshman at the time, he was like, dang, man, what'd y'all get for y'all's punishment? And the white kids was like, well, we got to write a letter of apology and do, you know, 12 hours of community service. And he was like, and the black kids looked like, what? It was like, what'd y'all get? I was like, well, we got academic, we got probation, you know, 50 hours of community service, formal apology, and, you know, they told coach and we got to do this and that. And the older guy, you know, he was seasoned to this. He was true to this, not new to this. He looked at both sides. He's like, but what's the difference? Oh, I see. And, you know, again, coming from an all-black high school, all-black area, I was not used to that at all. I was like, oh, all those things, you know, my grandma, my mom was talking about, like, this is real.
Because when you see it happening, like, right, I'm seeing it
right in front of my eyes, and I'm like.
So we ended up, so you still, did anyone say anything? Did y'all still had to?
I wasn't.
A part of it?
I was more of a witness. Like, okay. I told them, like, what I saw and whatnot, because okay. I wasn't with them at that time. But I don't know if they followed up with it or not.
That's
yeah, it's unreal.
That's a perfect example.
Yeah, it's unreal. It's unreal. Here's the one here. Reparations will be too expensive. Depriving the country of the opportunity to fix the Social Security and Medicare systems and meet other budget needs that benefit all Americans.
They're already trying to cut those things anyways.
Yeah, and I talked with some people this week, and they talked about self-interest, how people are so caught up in their self-interest, it's hard for them to see past things that will only that will benefit everyone or benefit someone other than themselves and not them. And that's truly difficult for them to see. So I think that goes back to it being a self-interest, because I don't think either of those things have to be affected.
Not with at reparations. All. Especially like in episode one where you mentioned that Illinois, where they were using $10 million from recreational marijuana to be used, you know, to support African-Americans. I don't understand why
all right.
We can't do the same thing here or something similar anyway.
So, advocates for reparation, those are the people who do not advocate. And then there's the issue, there's one last one there that I don't know if we don't have the answers to for sure, but who would get reparations? That's another argument. Who would we give it to?
Yeah.
Would it be to all black people? Would mixed kids get it?
Yeah.
Who would get reparations? And for how long? If we don't have, let's say they said reparations are going out, you know, October 30th, 2020. Do any children after that get reparations? And it also depends on how reparations come.
Yeah.
If it's monetary, is it something that's going to be annual or?
Yeah.
You know, that's an argument against it too. How do you figure that out? Who gets it and how do they get it?
Yeah, the logistics definitely would be kind of
so who
sticky to work out.
Who would you say gets it? Every black person?
Well, see, Chris and I talked about this, and Chris is my best friend, and he said, you know, like, how do you eliminate, because, like, technically, Kardashian kids would be eligible for reparations.
Mm-hmm.
They certainly don't need any of those benefits. However, mm-hmm. they would be, some people like them would be eligible to receive them, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I'm just saying, like, how do you, you know, distinguish?
Every black person gets reparations. Every descendant of enslaved peoples, that, and it does not have to be proven, because I had this question asked to me too when I brought up the reparations. Someone asked, and it was a white guy, he asked, would you get reparations? And I kind of looked around like,
why wouldn't I?
11 times out of 10, I mean, yeah. He was like, well, what if you were free? What if your descendants were free?
Well, guess what? We will never know that.
We will not ever.
Because we don't have the ability to trace our roots.
Yeah.
That's because when those slave ships were coming into Charleston and all the other areas, nobody kept records. Yeah. So.
That was a, you know, I had never even considered me not being eligible for any form of reparations. What? So. Some advocates for reparations. Quotes here. The claim for reparations is not against white Americans or even individual Americans. It is the claim against the American government and society, which has continued from the time of slavery. As all members of society and society's benefits, they also share the burdens in the form of taxation. Through slavery, African Americans were terribly wronged, and modern blacks were robbed of their inheritance. Further, blacks face racism every day. They deserve to be compensated. And like we said earlier when we talked about, you know, there's nobody here who participated in slavery. It's not against white people. It's not against, you know, you individually. It's against the American government and society that has perpetuated these things.
Thank you. And I think that's what, that a lot of people would take it personal. Like, we didn't do that. And blah, blah, blah. But it's just like,
right.
It doesn't come out of your pocket. It doesn't come. It doesn't affect your children. You still have the same. You still have the same privilege that you have if I get something.
Exactly.
I just want to be able to do the same things that you're able to do. And
without ridicule or discrimination or prejudice about it. Okay. So another advocate for reparations says the problems faced by many blacks today come from slavery and society's ongoing racism. Blacks were uprooted from their homes in Africa and brutalized in America by a system that destroyed the family structure and degraded the individual. When slavery ended, African Americans owned nothing. Isolated and discriminated against, they were denied education, contacts with society, and economic opportunity. Compared to whites, blacks remain in a disadvantaged position and will remain so until they receive compensation in society's racism ends. That's my favorite.
This was my favorite.
Yeah.
Because that says so much.
I agree.
It's like, oh, were you were, slavery was over. Yes, and guess what? We had nothing. Mm-hmm. They literally had to go out there, like you said, with the clothes on their back and mm-hmm. figure out life, mm-hmm. figure out everything. That's how a lot of them still lived on the plantation mm-hmm. because they didn't know any other way. Mm-hmm. They had no idea where to go.
Mm. Yep. Yep. Here's
so how do you, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, how do you, you started off with 20,000 steps behind everybody else. Still, and we're still trying to play catch up. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But proceed.
All right. Welfare, subsidized housing, affirmative action, and other previous efforts to address socioeconomic problems of the black underclass have been too little and too late. They fail society because society has failed to come to grips with the central problem, its own racism and discrimination. Mm-hmm. In some cases, social programs, though well-intentioned, actually increased black isolation and further degraded the black community. In addition, these programs benefited other groups, not just blacks. By doing so, they have failed to address the unique claims based on slavery that African Americans have. And I talked to Dr. Ty the other day, and he said this, you know, this profound quote. He said that that slavery in America is a unique institution and it needs to be addressed as a unique institution. What you cannot do is you cannot try to lump in mm-hmm. other injustices because you degrade, you know, the enslavement of Africans, of black
people.
And
you do that.
Yeah, you do. You degrade it and you water it down, and that's not okay.
Yeah. I'm learning now, like currently learning that like when you create a program that's like a public health program mm-hmm. or it a public like rural health, rural health is unique and you have to come up with ways to address it in a unique way. You can say, well, inner city health, this works here, let's place it on rural health. It's mm-hmm. not going to work that way. It has very unique properties and differences and opinions, and the people in that community, you know, they have a specific way of life and thinking, and you have to address those things in order to correct the issue. You can't just put a stamp of a general stamp on something and say, well, this worked here and it's going to work here too. Mm-hmm. That's not how things work.
Agreed. Talking about, you know, reparations being a great debt to America, this quote says, the cost of reparations may be great, but a debt is owed and must be paid. The moral claim for reparation at least equals that of any other government program. America is a rich country, and if the will exists, the money can be found. I kind of think that's stated with the stimulus checks.
Yeah.
I mean
that happened so quickly.
I mean, it's kind of like people need money. We're going to get these people money.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not this huge ripple in the economy that you know, that argument that the argument prior was staked.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it didn't put a hurting on healthcare or Medicare. It did none of that. So I do believe that it's possible if that is the choice to go that way. And then lastly, just as it is too early to decide how much is due in reparations, it is too early to agree on how to distribute reparations. Fair methods can be worked out once society acknowledges its obligation to provide reparations in the first place. And I think that is a super huge quote, because here you and I are talking about money and education, economics, the economy and all that. And reparations is not even on the table at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hasn't been a consideration. What this saying is, first somebody has to say in the White House, like, all right, there are going to be reparations. We are going to address this and we are going to make amends. And that has not happened.
No.
And first, you know, all of this, these two podcasts, you know, that's what's the troubling part, is it's happened before. It's happened to many different groups. It's going to continue to be a conversation, but someone has to agree to say, we're going to address this. They have to say, there is an issue. There is a problem. We're going to address this.
I agree.
According to Brookings EDU, Black Americans are the only group that has not received reparations for state-sanctioned racial discrimination, while slavery afforded some whites the ability to accrue tremendous wealth. And that is the ripple effect. That's the pebble. Mm-hmm. Slavery is the pebble that drops in the pond, and then there's the ripple of Jim Crow, the civil rights movement,
mm-hmm.
police brutality, and that ripple continues, and what we're trying to do is we're trying to stop that ripple.
Yeah, so it's been rippling for a real long time.
It has. So let's start getting into some of these questions. What does this say about America?
It has a lot of work to do. It's done a lot of wrongs.
Mm-hmm.
It says it kind of acknowledges, you know, oh, we messed up, but sorry.
Okay.
And let's move on.
So I'm indifferent with this, because I have two kind of thought processes. Is the fact that America, like when we looked on this website, I did this research, America had 52 incidences where they divvied out reparations 52 instances where they divvied out reparations total. In comparison to the rest of the world, there were eight.
Eight.
There were eight instances across the rest of the world to where reparations were given out.
And we've had 52.
52 to 8. Now, let's say, I don't know if that says America is progressive about apologizing for its wrongs,
mm-hmm.
and it's just one major wrong that they haven't addressed yet.
Or
other countries are not apologizing for their wrongs, or maybe that they have not done these wrongs to apologize for.
Yeah, it seems like if I get what you're saying, though, it could be that they own up to it, mm-hmm. and I'd like to be able to, you know, do the research on that to see if that's the case, or it could be they just messed up more times, mm-hmm. and they had to apologize more.
Right. Do you agree or disagree that many problems faced today by African-American communities are the legacy of slavery?
Of course.
Why?
Just like you said, the slavery enabled a lot of white families to become wealthy.
Mm.
It only hindered us from being able to have the skills to do anything, or to be able to gain that wealth and to be able to, you know, progress in life. It had the total opposite effect on us.
Indeed. I agree with that. Here's a big question. Are reparations needed?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want people to think reparations like, oh, they just want money. No, it's not that. I want to be able to, for us to be able to, if we get pulled over, we don't have to worry about, oh my God, are we going to be the next hashtag?
Mm. Mm.
And I feel like, and that, to me, you know, addressing such issues as that need to be a part of reparations.
Okay.
It's not just, because I don't want just $350,000 and for me to still be able to be treated the same.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I want. I want change.
Okay. What does it say that America has still not made a valuable proposal for reparations?
I think it's not, first of all, it's not been a priority. And maybe I'm happy that they haven't, because the needs have changed, you know, and maybe now they could, you know, come up with a team of people who could decide, you know, do the research and come up with a proper plan that will assist everyone.
Okay.
So the fact that they haven't, maybe it's just not important to them, but it also gives us a chance to come up with the right plan.
Outstanding that you said that, because we're going to move on to the question that everybody wants answered. What form should reparations come in, and why? I remember in the first podcast, or it might have been early in this podcast, I asked you to, you're going to have to choose. And your choice is not wrong. It's what you choose, because that's what it is. Because eventually, if this thing comes to, you know, comes to a point to where options are put on the table, mm-hmm. I would imagine that the most democratic way to do it would be to ask for a vote for what you want as the people. As a Black woman in America, what do you want when you get reparations?
You think that they'll really care about the opinions of people? I feel like they'll come up with, they'll have a team of people, some people from the community, politicians, researchers, you know, those type of people, and then say, hey, let's come up with a plan and this is what it's going to be.
I feel like we as a community, as a Black community, need to speak together, and we will not all agree, and that is okay.
Yeah.
But I feel like the most democratic way would be to vote, even if they just said, here are our options, vote on these options.
Which
one of these do you choose?
Okay.
But if you had to write in a ballot today, what you want out of reparations, what are you going to put on it?
Education. I don't know what form or fashion.
Okay.
Financial literacy. So teaching. A lot of, you and I are figuring out credit right now.
Mm-hmm.
How these things work. These are not things that we were taught.
Okay.
And how to manage money. So that's something that needs to be included.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay. My list is extensive. And it encompasses
put
a lot
it
of
all
things.
On the
okay.
line.
Housing. There needs to be some type of housing options and programs to get African Americans into homes.
Okay.
I don't necessarily know if I want it to be monetary. At first, I was like, yes, money. Okay, cool. But to me, I don't think that's going to be the answer.
Okay.
I have changed my mind about that.
Okay.
Because, like you said, we don't know. Is it just going to be you and I? What about our children? I want our kids to be able to benefit from this. Because guess what? Our grandparents and their great-grandparents, you know, all down the line, none of them have been able to benefit from any of these things. So I feel like it needs to be, although they didn't get it, going forward, you know, our grandkids and our great-grandkids and our great-great-grandkids, they'll be able to benefit from, from reparations.
Indeed. We're going to take a quick pause. Quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Black History Short Stories Podcast. And we're switching up here in light that Black history is being made today. We're going to talk about some of our topics that are going on today. And the past two podcasts have been about reparations. And we just heard the opinions of educated Black woman and what she wants to see out of reparations. And if you like my novice opinion, and I've formed this opinion over I've thought about it for years now, but really sat down and really considered our options and put everything on the table and talk with a bunch of people. And I personally, I don't want money. As a Black man, there is no monetary value you can put on the 400 years of slavery and oppression. You cannot. I personally don't believe you can put a value to it. What I would like to see is I would like to see land. I would like education, free education, for the next 10 generations of Black people. For the next 10 generations.
10 generations.
That's right. And when I say free education, that means free college or free trades.
Okay.
So if my great, great, great grandson wants to be a plumber, whatever that looks like then, he will be able to choose that for free and not worry about loans or worry about payments or worry about anything else that comes with the burdens of trying to learn a new trade. I would also like to see, and I stole this from Shane from the Perlow podcast. He came up with a great plan to fund all HBCUs, every one of them, make them major research institutions. He gave the example that Florida A&M would be the major research institution for marine biology. And he made the point to say that because, one, you get more money that way for mm-hmm. your schools, which is HBCUs need more money. Mm-hmm. He said, and two, and then you start getting black people into fields that they were not necessarily going to be in, or, you know, not necessarily had the opportunity to be in. You know, I've never Googled black marine biologists, but I imagine that that list is short.
Slim.
So that's my novice opinion. Why do you think everyone won't go for reparations? That is hard to get reparations.
I think people of other races are going to feel some type of way, I believe. They're going to be like, why do they get that?
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be an issue. Mm-hmm. It's like they get it, but we don't.
Mm-hmm. I would like to say a counter argument to that is, so imagine that, and this is, I had this argument with, well, I had this discussion too with someone else, is that when black people ask for reparations, they're not asking for reparations to pull you down to where black people are. We're asking you to help pull us up.
I agree.
To be equal, and we talk about that equity, and it's not, and I think that's where people, because their self-interest, they feel like if you get something and I don't, then you're better than me, and that's not, that's
or
not
I'm being wrong, or I'm being left out.
Right, what we're saying is we're unequal, and I need you to help pull us up.
Yes, I want to be able to have the things that you have.
And that's why I fully promote, you know, all, like, fully hope and pray that, you know, all white people are going to these protests and they hear our voice and they're listening. And I found an Instagram yesterday, Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man, and I loved it because those uncomfortable conversations need to happen because I need your support.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I need your support because you have to extend that hand to me. And reparations is an option. Like, that's one of the options, to extend that hand.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Protesting is another way to extend that hand to pull me up to you. And that, and that's the goal of all this. And that, and I think that's the end game of what we're looking for. The last thing is, where do we go from here? Where do we go? Because we've reached what I feel like, and, you know, I feel like this tipping point was in Martin Luther King died.
Yeah.
And, you know, we ended up, Civil Rights Movement's acts and voting acts being signed. Here we're at another tipping point. Where do we go?
We need to keep this momentum.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've seen a lot of things happen. First of all, we see the power of social media and of people who are fed up. Mm-hmm. And that's black people and white people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and a bunch of other races who have joined in and like, look, we're tired of seeing this.
Mm-hmm.
We're tired of our friends going out and, you know, not making it home. So I think everyone is fed up at this point. So we need to use this, the fuel that we have, and to keep trucking and to be able to, you know, really put something like reparations on the table.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, look, you see what's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what can we do moving forward to be better? I think we cannot drop the ball on this right now.
Indeed.
We have a voice, and it feels like it's being heard. I don't know if that's really happening.
I definitely think it's being heard.
It's the presence is known, the protesting, it's all working.
All right.
I think we need to keep it up to be able to really enact some change.
I agree. And one of the major things that I see that it is affecting, you know, everybody, when you turn on Netflix and there's that Black Lives Matter option, you know, we see that and we're like, wow.
Yeah.
I can't believe, you know, and in another household that's not black, you know, that might spark a conversation that they have never had before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, babiesnames.com, when they put their statement out, you know, when you're searching for your child's name, it's at the top of their page. And if you hadn't heard of it or you hadn't thought about it, you have to look at that.
You're going
to
learn about it.
You have to, yes.
And it's in your face. You can't ignore it.
Exactly. I can guarantee you. You know, that some on some venue, on some website, when somebody makes a statement, somebody who was unaware of this said, what is going on?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they were outraged. And, you know, at the worst, they're aware.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree.
And I think
and you know what? That's a great way to think about it. Because a lot of, like on social media, especially, a lot of people are like, okay, companies, we see you with these Black Lives Matter, mm-hmm. you know, tags and, you know, statements, but what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Like, put some action behind it. But like you just pointed out, it could just be, even if they did nothing else except say that, mm-hmm. when someone who didn't care about the situation and it didn't affect them, when they went to your website and they saw that, they may have clicked on it mm-hmm. and learned a little bit that day.
That's right.
And that is huge.
I agree.
Is huge, because I know that I've said, like, I don't have time to teach white people about why. Mm.
Go on.
About why I'm fed up, or about why I'm afraid for you to go running, or about, you know, I just felt like, and it wasn't a negative thing towards white people. It's just like, I am still trying to figure out my own feelings. I don't have time to try to teach you about it when you can learn the same way I'm learning. Okay. That's how I felt.
And in another conversation, we'll talk about how I do believe that it is a part of a Black person's responsibility to inform people about these injustices, mm-hmm. because again, they have never experienced this. And this might be my experience at, you know, a predominantly white institution, but I talk to people who have no idea, or have no understanding, who have no comprehension of what racism looks like. And they can perpetuate it, and they have no clue that they're doing it.
Microaggressions.
Right. In the video I looked at, an uncomfortable conversation with a Black man, the backhanded compliments when people say things, well, white people might say things like, you're pretty for a dark skinned girl.
No, I've had people say, oh, you speak very well.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what did you think I was going to say?
Exactly.
Sarah, well,
to some white people, this is a compliment, and they don't know any better. And that's up to you. And if you don't tell them about themselves, they will never know. They will continue to do this, and their children will do it, and they will continue that process.
However, I could also say, okay, in that moment when someone says to me, you speak very well, if I, you know, say, you know, call them out on that, mm-hmm. I'm considered angry.
Okay.
Even if I say it in a nice way, mm-hmm. Because I am a bigger Black woman, I look aggressive to some people.
Okay.
So me saying something to that person when they felt like they were giving me a compliment, and I let them know that that's not a compliment, now I look like I'm the angry person.
Another conversation. Gotta stick to the topic.
I need to put that out there.
Reparations. And we're going to have to agree to disagree with it. Because again, doing this research, I've heard both sides of the story. And you're right. It is not your responsibility. It is not your responsibility. But me personally, I take that responsibility. Because if I don't, I don't know who will.
And I don't think that you're wrong. I appreciate you doing it. I think really for me, it's just like right now, I don't have the mental capacity to try to teach you something that I'm still trying to figure out myself.
I completely understand. All right. So move forward. Where do we go from here? Like we said, keep the momentum, you know, keep the protests going. Your voice is being heard. Major companies are finally, you know, acknowledging that there's an issue. Celebrities come out and they say their piece. And whether they're doing it for PR or whether they really feel that way, it's getting done, you know. Yeah. And I know some Black people will feel indifferently to that. Respondents in an APNORC, Center for Public Affairs Research poll, said they believe the U.S. government should pay reparations to the descendants of enslaved Black people. Just 15% of white participants supported the idea. Self-interest, I would say.
I told you.
In another survey, about 29% of the people questioned support reparations or payment to African Americans whose family members were slaves, according to a poll conducted in September of nearly 1,300 Black, white, and Hispanic Americans. I wish they were more specific on those demographics. I want to know who said what. And this conversation of reparations is not isolated, you know, to Black people. I think everyone has an opinion on it. From people who have received reparations, according to the Union of Reformed Judaism, they are quoted saying, our Jewish texts are clear on the importance of restitution of wrongs committed. The rabbis understood that the victim of a crime was made whole by financial repayment for damages done. So, you know, in the Jewish book, they are, and this was in a conversation for them about reparations for enslaved Black people, and they agree with it. They're all for
Jewish
it.
Jewish people have received reparations, correct?
Yes, they have.
Okay.
From Germany. Yes. Solutions. The ACLU says support H.R. 40 and reparations for slavery, and that's the bill. You want to support that bill. They're quoted saying, I urge you to support H.R. 40, which would establish a commission to examine the institution of slavery and its impact and make recommendations for reparations to Congress. So what that bill says is they're going to join a community. They're going to talk about it. But that's the first step.
I support that. Yep. That's a huge step.
That's the first one we talk about is acknowledging that it's on the table.
Yes. And this says, okay, yeah, we want to give these people something, but these are the reasons why they need it.
Right.
Not deserve, but need.
You know? I agree. So some people have found that if you wanted reparations immediately, you want to kind of look locally. And according to a Washington Post article, local action could be even more meaningful to descendant communities than federal policies. Jennifer Oso, historian who studies churches and slavery in Virginia, told me, this is a quote, local players have much closer relationship to slavery, and they've got people who are willing to look at the history and do something about it. That could also help develop momentum for national redress, i.e. they talk about churches, colleges, railroads, insurance companies that, you know, insurance companies insured slaves, you know, or specific local institutions. Okay. You know, and we talked about in the last podcast, the churches that have given reparations. And we talked about the institutions, including Georgetown, mm-hmm. that had given reparations. So they're saying, look to that. And there is one major enslaver that is just coming into view. And this is also from the Washington Post article. The U.S. military has long been known that enslaved laborers were used to build fortifications and man naval yards. But historians are now discovering another element of military enslavement. From the early 19th century through the end of the Civil War, the Army provided its officers with a monthly stipend to cover salaries for their personal servants. If these servants happened to be enslaved, then the officer could simply keep the money for himself as a bonus payment. This was a powerful inducement to purchase slaves. At least half of all officers took advantage. According to Yov Hamdani, a doctoral student at Columbia University who was researching this topic, meaning thousands of enslaved people owed their bondage directly to federal policy. Among the documents Hamdini has discovered are pay vouchers tied to future U.S. President Zachary Taylor, as well as future Confederate President Jefferson Davis.
I've never heard of this, and I am appalled.
Yeah. They call it slavery is a this peculiar is institution. Oh, yeah.
This is there's oh, yeah. no way. Oh, this yeah. is you have listed every major area of the U.S. Mm-hmm. That has benefited from enslaved people.
Mm-hmm. Yep, including the U.S. military.
They gave them vouchers uh-huh. to pay those people.
And if you're a slave, you don't get that money. You're
free labor. They got a bonus for having a personal slave.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely did. But going forward, there are still ton of questions to be answered. There are still a ton of conversations we need to have. And, you know, it is perfectly okay to, and I'll tell you, I change my mind all the time with the product of new information, with hearing different opinions, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay to grow in that way,
yeah.
to look back and say, because, you know, 2 months from now, I might come back and say, you know, that podcast on reparations, you know, I don't feel that way anymore. I feel yeah. differently. I don't think that way anymore. And that's okay. And that's part of growing. I need everybody in America to take that.
Yeah.
To take that specifically for people who, you know, yell out all lives matter. You know, that's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, I think if you haven't heard the analogy that, you know, the burning house, they say, you know, if the house is on fire, you don't put out all the houses. You focus on the house that's burning. You know, I heard another good one that was my favorite. They said if your friend gets a cut on their arm, you know, everybody doesn't get a Band-Aid. Yeah. You address
the person with the issue.
The issue. And, you know, until that issue is addressed, all things can't be addressed.
I agree.
Yeah. But do you have any final insights that you want to leave our listeners with?
do your research, study, figure things out. That's what we've been doing, especially in the last couple of weeks. I think it's fair to say that myself in particular, I'm a learner. I love to learn new things and figure out things. So me diving into reparations and police brutality and systemic and systematic racism, it's not something that's new. It's just I've been doing it a lot more lately, and I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you know, I've changed my mind on a lot of things, and I've have new opinions. And I think that it's important for everyone to do. You know, even I challenge everyone to learn something new or you know, read a different article or check out a different news station that you may not necessarily pay attention to, just to see, you know, what other people are talking about and how they view things, and see how it lines up or doesn't line up with how you feel about the state of the world, and just be open.
Indeed. And don't forget to vote. Super Please. Important for locally and the presidential election, because if you don't feel like your voice is heard, that is the best way to yes. know that your voice is getting heard. And if you haven't done the census, do the census.
Yes. Oh, yes. Very important.
Yes. That's one of the things I took from Oprah's two talks. Yes. Vote and do the census.
Census is very important. It helps fund a lot of things, and they do utilize that information from Indeed. The census.
And that's coming from someone who's getting their master's in public health, so she knows all about that. But thank you for joining us today. If you would like to reach out to us and give us ideas for the podcast, tell us ways we can improve, make a correction in the research. If you got a question, if you have an opinion and you want to dial in, please, I want to hear all of it. Feel free to email us at bhshortstories@gmail.com. That's B as in black, H as in history, and short stories, plural. See you guys next week. Thank you.